We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our creator, not our government. I believe that scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, September 3rd, and this is the first time this week that I am joining you live because we celebrated a holiday yesterday, Labor Day. And for those of you who had the three-day weekend, I'm sure that you are going back to work. You're probably listening to this live, at least on your drive to work, or as you're preparing maybe for homeschooling this morning because school is back in session. Or if you are listening on the podcast later, maybe you're coming back home from work or you're on a break from work. But work is today. And so the topic that I wanted to start out this morning, not just for Labor Day, but the topic of work, because I've seen so many social media posts that when we have a three-day weekend, whenever it is, there are so many social media posts about people complaining about having to go back to work and a three-day weekend isn't long enough and we hate our jobs and we're just so ready that, you know, the moment I can clock out and get rid of my terrible boss and colleagues and everything, I want to go home. And it's such a bad attitude toward work. And so two things this morning that I want to talk about is not just in the sense of Labor Day, but in terms of work, how do we as Christians view work and what is the biblical worldview of how we should approach our jobs and our attitude of work? And then also, what is work in the context of Labor Day and the American experience? Because as we're talking about the November election and the contrast between socialism and communism, Labor Day is actually an annual celebration of the social and economic achievements of American workers. And when we look back at the first and the second Industrial Revolution and American history, it's Americans that have contributed the most in terms of recent innovations. And historically, the American experience was all about being able to innovate and use the skills and talents that God has given us within the context of the liberty that our government provides so that we can have achievements. And that's a good and a very exciting thing. So Labor Day isn't just that we get to have a break from work and we get to be super excited that we're off for a couple of days. It's all about understanding what labor genuinely is. And so from the perspective and the biblical perspective, God himself is a worker. He is the creator God. And we see in the first creation week that God created and he called that good. And then he continues to create. He didn't just have the 6 days of creation. And for those of us who have the theology that the Bible is literal and the events are historical, Genesis is a literal historical record of how God created, how we came to be in existence, the purpose of mankind, and then, of course, the fall of sin, and then the redemption, ultimately, of Jesus, our Savior, and that entire history, and also how God initially started the world and how we came into existence in the beginning. And so when we ask those questions of that are very existential, we can go back to the book of Genesis and we know that God, the author of all things, told us what happened in creation week. If you listen to Answers in Genesis and Ken Ham, and I know that some of you are going to the AFR at the Ark soon, one of my favorite things that Ken Ham always says for people who say, well, Genesis isn't literal, and he says, well, were you there? That's always been his rhetorical question. Were you there? Well, God was, and he told us what he did during creation week. And in Genesis 2, when God had created man, Genesis 2:15, it says, "The Lord took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and keep it." And this is pre-Genesis 3, which is when they ate of the fruit of the garden and the knowledge of good and evil, and then were expelled from the garden, and then we toil sometimes in vain, the Herculean labors, and we have thorns in our gardens, and we have, you know, other things that we have to contend with because we live in a fallen world. But work and creation and this idea of work being good and man having a purpose in work pre-exists the fall. And work is a very good thing. God commanded the man, even before he created woman, he took the man, put him into the Garden of Eden to tend his garden and to keep it. So our attitude toward our jobs, and sometimes our labor can seem in vain, or we are frustrated rightly about different aspects of our jobs. But as Colossians 3:23 also says, whatever you do, work heartily, as for the Lord and not for men. So even if we have a job that may be frustrating in various aspects, or I was just talking to a woman at church who's part of my small group on Wednesdays, who was saying, you know, that she's looking for a new job and really wants to transition from her current occupation to more of ministry and something different. And we were talking about that. And I totally understand those things, because I've definitely been in situations in my life and through college, and for everyone who's been through college, it seems like it never ends, because you want to get to your job. And then ultimately going through, whether it's a career path or a ministry path, to get to the place where you're excited about what you do, because a vocation is using your skill sets and understanding the gifts and talents God has given you, and then using that in a way that you can actually earn a living. You can provide for your families, especially if you are a man who is providing for your family. As a single woman right now, I provide for myself, and there are a lot of us out there as well, or there may be dual income homes where a woman also works, or if you are a stay-at-home mom, your sole occupation right now is the education and homeschooling of your children. That is work. And the income, quote unquote, that you're receiving is the blessing of training up your children in the way that they should go, so when they're older, they don't depart from it. So all of these things and occupations are, and the work and the vocation that God has given you is good. And when I had first graduated law school, that was in 2011. So I went into law school in 2008, which was right when the economy crashed, as we're potentially looking at whether we're going to have a repeat of that if Kamala Harris gets in to the White House, just like when Obama came into the White House, and, you know, all of the problems with that. But in 2008, a lot of people went back to school because the economy was so bad. And I'm sitting here thinking, I've wanted to go to law school like basically my whole life, and all these other people are just doing this for fun, basically, now. But okay. So then when I graduated, there was a surplus of a lot of different trained people, especially with graduate degrees. So I thought that my ministry and the vocation God was calling me to when I graduated law school was to be a career prosecutor. And there are only so many of those jobs because they're for the state. So as I was looking for a job as a prosecutor, or even as a lawyer, that took a while after I graduated. And so I graduated and, you know, took the bar, graduated in May of 2011, took the bar, did an internship with the Colorado Attorney General's office, and then had Christmas. But basically by January, I didn't yet have a job. So I looked online and, you know, all of those things, and I ended up getting a job as a barista at my local coffee shop. And I remember sitting down with the manager and saying, you know, listen, I'm looking actively for a job as a lawyer, because that's my vocation and that's what I want to do. But if you hire me for however long I'm here, and it may be a year, I don't know, it may be a month, but for however long I'm here, I will be the hardest working person that you have on my shifts. And I will, you know, do this with a great attitude. And so asked for the job, and he gave me a job. And so every day that I went in to that location, and this was in Arlington. I went to the University of Richmond, and so had then just moved a little bit to DC, that kind of area. And before going back to Colorado. And so in Arlington, you know, you have all of these people who come in and they're in their work clothes and they're going to their high powered jobs and everything. And every day it was something where I sat there and I thought, and here I am just serving coffee, you know, and this is what all of these people coming in and the customers, that's where I want to be. But I kept praying and I kept, you know, asking the Lord for to provide, but I was faithful to that job. And every day that I went in, I thought about what I told the manager and said, I need to do this because the Bible says, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord. And so knowing, and my colleagues knew that I was a Christian, I wanted to have a good testimony. And unbeknownst to me, there was a lawyer who worked for the State Department at the time, who would come in as a regular. I didn't know that, but one of my colleagues did. And actually told this gentleman that I was newly graduated from law school looking for a job. And he watched me for several weeks and kind of wanted to see what my attitude was working. And ended up telling me that he thought I was the happiest person in that entire coffee shop. And he was so impressed with my attitude toward the work that he wanted to interview me for a potential job that ultimately was with a contractor for the State Department to help them with litigation that ended up then being acquired by Deloitte. That's a whole other story. but they wanted to get a few contractors to help with litigation and a trial that they were about to do. And so he ended up hiring me for that position. And I had the opportunity before I was a prosecutor for probably about 6 or 8 months, I forget exactly how long it was, to be part of this 5-week trial that for a very young lawyer, you know, brand new, it was such good experience and it was so great. And the Lord, I genuinely believe, allowed me to have that experience because my attitude toward the position I was in was biblical and it was right, because whatever I did, I was working heartily for the Lord and not for men. And so even if you are at a position right now that you know isn't for you and you want to do something better and greater, pray for that, but have a good attitude going into work, knowing that even if you're at a job that you detest or your job that you love, you're doing it as unto the Lord. And we're using our skills and talents, hopefully, in jobs and in work that is productive for the glory of the Lord, because God is still in the business of creating. He didn't stop with just the creation week. He continues every spring to create the beautiful world around us in spring. He creates every moment of conception is the creation of a new life that is wholly and completely just from God himself. He takes an active role in work daily, and we need to have an attitude that reflects that and says that because we understand that we serve a creator God, and one of his attributes is creation and a love of work and a love of doing good, that we also take that attitude toward everything that we do. So be encouraged today as you are going back to work from your holiday weekend. And I love being here, by the way, because I'm so excited that I get to be in a place of ministry. And I told Tim Wildman and Walker when I first accepted this position at AFR that I was so excited to be back in full-time ministry, which is what I truly believe God is calling me to, even 10 years ago when I first wrote my book. And now, did I have other experiences and other things? You know, yes, and some of those very, very prominent. But ultimately, it's not about that, because I've had a number of people when I left working for Trump saying, oh, wow, you're never going to have as cool of a position. You're never going to. How does it feel to like go back to regular society? And I'm thinking, fine, because my goal in working for a sitting president was, one, God opened that door. But second, it wasn't for my own name, my own glory, my own, you know, any of that. It was to do that for the glory of God and to be a prominent Christian in that role. And so now that I'm in this role, I'm just doing today what God has for me today. I'll do tomorrow what God has for me tomorrow, just like I have done in the past, the things that God has had for me in the past. So whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. Proverbs 16:3 also says, commit your work to the Lord and your plans will be established. And 1 Corinthians 10:31 also says, so whatever you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. And so today on Labor Day, just in the last minute or so we have in this segment, Labor Day is also about American achievement. And there's a great piece that I now don't have time to read in Daily Wire, but it's from Jeremy Boring. And it's called On Gosling, America, and the Human Achievement. And it's actually in the context of a Neil Armstrong biopic, First Man. But he goes on to talk about how America's achievements were not just human achievement, but specifically American, because the design of our society is to promote work and innovation and experience and to continue to be creators and to innovate like that and using our skills and talents, because we were founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview and our government protects the right of all of us to choose our vocation and to follow the Lord in that. And so we need to preserve and protect that in American society as well. So as we celebrate Labor Day, enjoy your work today. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If ending babies' lives in their mother's womb isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. In a shocking stance, the Democrats' vice presidential nominee, Tim Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you are pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds is $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a full day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR, preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, while we were away on Labor Day and celebrating our vocations and American achievement in particular, there was a controversy yet again with former President Trump on the campaign trail, where he was asked by an NBC reporter about Amendment 4 here in the state of Florida, and his initial response and then his response the next day after all of the controversy on Fox News. But I want to set this up by saying, so President Trump was the most pro-life president, I think, at least in my lifetime, possibly other than Ronald Reagan. And when I worked for him, I was very proud of the fact that he was very pro-life. He attended the March for Life. He was very committed to appointing justices and judges who are pro-life. And that is a very good thing. That is a biblical thing. It is the right perspective. It's not just a conservative policy. It is a truthful view. And so since then, and in this next campaign, he's taken the position, and the RNC nationally, to not push for a federal solution to abortion regulation. And he has consistently said, let's leave it to the states, let's leave it to the states. And personally, I think as a Christian that that is not the best perspective. We should still push for a constitutional amendment federally pursuant to the 14th Amendment, that Congress can legislate to protect life. And we could also have a constitutional amendment that protects life. But at least on the state level, when we're just talking about the state level, Trump didn't really want to talk about that. And it is very controversial. You're never going to talk about abortion that not be a controversial opinion in this election. So he was asked specifically by a reporter about Florida's amendment, which for those of you who've listened regularly to this program and others at AFR, you know that this amendment is so extreme, it would allow abortion until the moment of birth, state-funded. It's horrible. It would overturn the heartbeat bill, and it would also cement this so-called right to abortion in the state constitution that the legislature couldn't even come to it and amend it. And the language is just so vague that it's terrible. So Governor DeSantis has been adamantly opposed to that. We're very grateful for all of the work that he and his office are doing to oppose this and to educate people on this. So Trump was asked, well, you say that abortion should be left to the states and to the will of the people in each state. Well, you're a Floridian. He has a vote here in my home state now as well, in Florida. How are you going to vote on Amendment 4? So this is what he said initially to the NBC reporter. Cut one.
You overturn,
well, everyone does.
You,
I mean,
overturn,
I think
Roe,
does, yeah.
And you want abortion to be a states' rights issue. In Florida, the state that you are a resident of, there's an abortion-related amendment on the ballot to overturn the six-week ban in Florida. How are you going to vote on that?
Well, I think the 6 week is too short. It has to be more time, and so that's, and I've told them that I want more weeks.
So you'll vote in favor of the amendment?
I'm voting that, I am going to be voting that we need more than 6 weeks. Look, just so you understand, everybody wanted Roe v. Wade terminated for years, 52 years. I got it done. They wanted it to go back to the states. Exceptions are very important for me, for Ronald Reagan, for others that have navigated this very, very interesting and difficult path.
So Trump inevitably got a lot of pushback for that. And my response to that was, well, more than 6 weeks isn't on the ballot. That's not what he's voting for. It's either you leave the status quo or you vote for this extreme state constitutional amendment. Those are the only two options. Now, Trump did not say that he was voting for it, but he said that he supported more than 6 weeks, which that response as well. If he truly believes that God saved him from the assassination attempt and saved his life, then how much more should he want to save the lives of unborn children? But there was so much outrage from the pro-life community, and I give all of them credit for participation in the social media and also media just absolute objection to what he said to that reporter, that not even 24 hours later at another rally, he said that he's going to vote no because it is so extreme. And I personally think that he actually finally read the amendment, got better advice on what it actually is. And so this is what he said the next day to the Fox News reporter. Cut two.
Voting yes or no on Amendment 4 in Florida.
So I think 6 weeks, you need more time than 6 weeks. I've disagreed with that right from the early primaries. When I heard about it, I disagreed with it. At the same time, the Democrats are radical because the 9 months is just a ridiculous situation that where you can do an abortion in the ninth month. And, you know, some of the states like Minnesota and other states have it where you could actually execute the baby after birth. And all of that stuff is unacceptable. So I'll be voting no for that reason.
Great. Trump is voting no. I hope that he is willing to engage more in the state of Florida and help Governor DeSantis defeat this. But let's welcome in Tim Wildman, who is my boss here at AFA. And of course, Tim, I'm so grateful that you've given me the opportunity to work here at this ministry. We've been talking about Labor Day and vocation. But I want to get your response to this whole controversy, because there's a lot of different ways I think that we could think about this. But overall, Christians should have the biblical worldview of not just going along with whatever happens to be the RNC's position or Trump or whatever. We need to stand firm on life. And a lot of the opposition to the pro-life community that came out in opposition to Trump's initial statement, there were a lot of people that were saying, well, shh, just quiet down on pro-life because we want Trump to get in office and we don't want to spark this controversy. I don't think that that's the correct way to respond to these types of controversies. What say you? And good morning.
Yeah. Well, good morning, Jenna. Yeah. You know, with President Trump, I've got a saying, good Trump, bad Trump. All right. Are you asking me to weigh in on the morality of what he's saying, or the practicality of what he's saying, or which part of
all,
it? You will
all
be
of the above, because I think that's a really good distinction, actually, because the morality doesn't change, but a lot of people were saying, you know, don't oppose him on even if he wanted to vote right for more than 6 weeks, because practically speaking, that's actually better to win moderates.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about what the law is currently in Florida for just a minute, your home state, as you say. It is the Florida state legislature passed a law that says you cannot do abortions in the Sunshine State after 6 weeks, because that's when the heartbeat of the baby begins. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
That was what Governor DeSantis signed.
Yes, and then Governor DeSantis signed that law that the legislature passed, and he supported it. He supported it wholeheartedly, and he's taken a lot of criticism for that. In fact, some people said it makes him not viable, talking about Governor DeSantis, as a national candidate because of his support for the heartbeat law in the state of Florida. Okay, so that's what we're talking about. What Trump was asking, so the amendment, I know I'm getting elementary and repeating here, but I think we need to review this for just a minute. The in response to the heartbeat law, the pro-abortion side in Florida, they would call themselves pro-choice, put this amendment forward, which the people of Florida will vote on in November, which needs a 60% threshold to become, to overthrow, basically, overturn the Harvey bill, right?
Right.
Okay, so that's good that it needs 60%. You shouldn't be able to me, you shouldn't be able to pass a statewide amendment to your Constitution just on 51%. But so I'm glad it's 60% threshold. So that's what's on the amendment. Either you support the heartbeat bill or with 6 weeks, or you want to allow for abortion on demand up to 9 months in the state of Florida. That's the only choices you have with voting yes or no on this amendment. So I agree with you. Trump was asked about this initially. Trump's position is he's clear. Well, he's clear, but he's ambiguous at the same time, if I can say
that. Isn't that Trump?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. He's clear that he doesn't believe in the heartbeat bill.
Right.
He doesn't believe, he would somewhere between 6 weeks and I don't know where, because he won't say, he believes abortion should be allowed up to, what, 3 months? Would that be fair, probably, what he would come up with? I don't know. I've heard him say 15 weeks. Something
maybe,
like
that. I mean, Lindsey Graham has said around 15 weeks. He hasn't really like supported that, but right. Probably around there.
But that's what Trump said. Trump said it's too soon to restrict abortion after 6 weeks. He wants to allow more time. Well, that's not the question on the and I do think you're right. I think that he maybe read the law and had the amendment and had it explained to him, and then he came out and said the right thing, that he was going to vote to support, to vote no on overturning the heartbeat bill in the state of Florida. So, did that answer your question?
Well,
go ahead.
Not really, actually, because I mean,
well, good. I'm a politician then.
Exactly, right?
Yes,
so,
yes.
But I think that was a good restatement of the background of this. And so, from a moral perspective, obviously, we disagree with him that there should be more than 6 weeks allowed for abortion because, as DeSantis says, the heartbeat bill is a good start, but he is a pro-life abolitionist.
Right. Right.
And so we disagree with that, but we agree and we commend him for coming out against what's the only thing on the ballot, which is yes or no on Amendment 4, and you need to vote no, because that is standing for life, and that's saying, no, we don't want the extreme of this. But what I want to ask you about, Tim, is this controversy of abortion. A lot of people who really want to see Trump win, for a lot of very good reasons, because they don't want the communists to win, are saying that Christians should basically just shut up and be quiet about abortion and pro-life because that is such a controversial issue that we're going to lose moderates. I don't think that Trump is winning anybody from the pro-life side because he has said, I'm in favor of abortion more than 6 weeks.
No, okay. I'm going to answer this question, and I want people to hear what I say without, don't just jump to a conclusion here. I'm going to put on my political analysis hat, okay? Or I'm going to be a sociologist for just a minute, okay? I'm not speaking necessarily just from the scripture, all right? I'm not a Bible teacher anyway, but the authority of the scripture is that God believes God created human life in the womb from conception. That's been the moral teaching in the church for as long as I can, forever, right? I mean, God created life from conception. All right, now if you want to talk about where the American general public is on this issue, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about whether it's right or wrong, or biblical or unbiblical. I'm talking about where is the general American public on this issue of abortion. I would say they are more in line with Trump's stated position, whatever it would be, probably the first trimester. allowing abortion in the first trimester would be somewhere where the most American, the majority of the American general public would be if they were polled about it. Okay, do you disagree with that, Jenna?
No, I agree, unfortunately, and it means we have a lot more work to do, but I agree.
Well, okay, so I think Trump, in thinking about this politically, and his advisors, who are not thinking about it necessarily in a biblical way or a moral way necessarily, although, as you said, give him credit, he was the most pro-life president we've had since Ronald Reagan in his 4 years in office, President Trump. So the things that he did, the actions that he took, supported the pro-life cause and the pro-life movement, and he deserves credit for that. Was that transactional? By that, I mean, was he trading off those things for the support of pro-life community and the Christian community in voting and supporting him? Yes, to a degree, at least. That was a factor for him. That's been the art of the deal, right? I mean, he trades. He doesn't necessarily have conviction himself on an issue, but if it can help him politically, and you can do something for him, and he can do something for you, and it all works out good, in his perspective politically, then that's a win for him. So I know that sounds somewhat convoluted, but I do think that we got a lot of work to do in the pro-life community, because I do think that the most Americans, by a majority of Americans, would be in favor of abortion, at least through the first trimester. We couldn't get a personhood amendment passed in Mississippi 10 or 12 years ago, and that we're one of the most pro-life, you know, red states in America. So it's very difficult to pass anything more than a 6-week ban, which is a heartbeat ban, which makes sense to a lot of people. At least that makes sense to a lot of people. They go, well, I understand what you're saying. When there is a heartbeat of a baby, then it should be protected, and people can grasp that.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And Governor DeSantis has even said that even here in the state of Florida, even though there are 1 million more registered Republicans in this state, that even Republicans, that means, are generally in favor of allowing abortion at least before a heartbeat, and sometimes, as you said, Tim, up until the first trimester. Most people, even Democrats and pro-choice advocates, I mean, you have to be really extreme to think that you would be in favor of allowing abortion until the moment of birth. So the majority of Americans, regardless of political party or where you fall on the spectrum, are unfortunately generally agreed that abortion should be allowed in the first trimester. And we're seeing that now that this conversation is back on the table, that states can regulate abortions in different ways, then we're running up against things like Amendment 4. So my next question then is, for the people who say, okay, I disagree with what Trump is saying, I understand maybe that it's transactional for him, it's more the art of the deal. We've known that about him. 2016, Christians supported him in spite of some of the other things they disagreed with. He was better than the alternative, all of those things. Can a Christian, not necessarily should they, because we're not endorsing anybody here, but from a biblical perspective, do you think that a Christian can vote for a candidate that has that position when they're looking at it as, well, this is more transactional and it's, you know, he's better than the communist, basically?
Sorry, Jenna, gotta go now. I've got
I'm
gonna be late for a meeting, so I can't really answer that question. Good luck. Thank you for laying the trap for me right there. Okay, so let's break that down. Okay. Again, good people can I would say good people. I'll do a Trump here. Good people can disagree and follow your heart. I'll do a Trump here. That question would probably be like an hour debate or discussion. But yeah. Here are my thoughts. You ask me my opinion. And by the way, I don't speak for anybody but me on this. Okay. So if somebody disagrees, that's fine. My view on politics is that it's not the same as the church, okay? It's not the same as the family. The family unit, the church, you have an absolute right to have a pastor and deacons and or elders that support the doctrine of the church and the bylaws of the church and the moral standards of the church. Absolutely. You have a right to expect that. With general politics, you're talking about the public, the pagans. Okay, we got to live with the pagans, all right, in America, mm-hmm. and the non-believers and the people of different religions. And I mean, it's a melting pot of beliefs and worldviews and or non-worldviews. And I mean, so all those people go to the polls to vote, right?
Right.
To and they elect people to enact laws or to for the benefit of the safety or the or the non-benefit sometimes of the society. So my view on that is you've got to deal with the reality of the choices that you have. And to vote, to me, to say I'm not going to vote for, let's say, President Trump, for example, versus Vice President Harris, okay? Vice President Harris is for abortion for 9 months up to the birth and paying for it and all that. I mean, she's as extreme. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she's very extreme.
She's very, very extreme on this issue. So I look at, well, what's the other option? Well, it's Trump. Nobody else is going to win. It's going to be either Trump or Harris, one or the other. So if we want to play games about voting for a third party, to me, it's playing games. For other people, they might say, no, it's a matter of conviction. Okay, that's just where we can just say, okay, let's be friends and let's not argue about this anymore. I'm just telling you, for me, I have to go with the most pro-life choice that has a possibility to win. And also with Trump, it's on the judges. It's on the judges. I hope and pray if he's elected, he will continue to appoint pro-life judges. That's my view. Now, do I get to ask you a controversial question?
Sure, but there's the music. Yeah. You know,
I'm sorry, I got to go right here. Bye. Yeah.
Well, this is why I invited Tim on, because it is very controversial, and I appreciate your opinion. And I agree with you that reasonable Christians can disagree. Your position is absolutely meritorious. And for those who say, as a matter of conscience, I just can't do that, conscience versus tell us. But we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning to talk more about this.
So your hands are covered in gunk, and you realize it's time for your favorite AFR show. If you have an Alexa device, just ask Alexa to play the appropriate live stream. You can also listen to a particular podcast from a specific day, or find out when a show airs, all without using your hands. To find out all about how Alexa can help you enjoy AFR, head on over to afr.net/Alexa-skill. Then, your AFR wish is Alexa's command.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And Tim Wildman has left the studio. He got there pretty quick. But I appreciate that he is willing to come on and address the difficult questions, because these are very difficult questions. And I know that there are a lot of people, and I hear from listeners all the time, who say, I want Trump to be more pro-life and he's not. So, you know, can I vote for him? Should I as a Christian? And then there are other people who are saying, how can you even possibly question that? Of course you should, because look, the only other alternative is a communist. And how dare you even think about questioning that? And I think with all of this, we need to have a lot of grace for people who look at this differently in terms of what the actual duty is before the Lord. Because the Bible doesn't have a verse that says you must vote in a constitutional republic, right? We have principles and commands of the Lord that we need to steward our all of the blessings of liberty. We need to steward everything that we have, which as the blessings of liberty, we have the opportunity in this country to vote if we are citizens. So we need to steward that well, like we would our finances, our family, anything else. And we also have the principles that we need to be good citizens, to show the pagans that we are faithful to the Lord. And so how do you discharge your duty in a manner that best fulfills those principles? And I think this comes down to a matter of wisdom. This is not a, if you vote for Trump, that is the only way you can discharge your duty faithfully, or if you vote against him, that's the only way, or the opposite view, that if you do vote for him, you are wrong and it's sinful, or if you don't vote for him, it's wrong and it's sinful. Because as a matter of wisdom, there can be, and the conscience verses speak to this, in terms of Paul and his view that the meat offered to idols in the New Testament, there were some Christians that maybe based on their own experience, they were former pagans that had been part of those rituals and those horrific types of worship in the Athenian temple and all of that. They just couldn't participate because it reminded them of their sin in the past. I know people who have been, you know, saved from alcoholic lifestyles. They can't even have a glass of wine at dinner because it just reminds them of what the Lord saved them from. So as to them, if they partook in that, it would be sin to them. But then others who they weren't part of that at all, and they're going, this just, you know, the idol's not a thing. That's not a big deal. I can definitely do that with a clean conscience. So he says, for those people, they're free in Christ. So there is freedom in Christ. In terms of the morality of this, to choose the lesser of two evils, or to, if your conscience requires it, to abstain. And I personally, and this is just my opinion, from a biblical perspective, there is no scripture that commands a vote in this instance, you know, for or against Trump or abstaining or not. It is a matter of each individual conscience, and we need to be able to have these conversations without impugning the character or the good faith intent of our fellow Christian if their motive is to honor the Lord in their life. So that's my view of it. But let's get Father Frank Pavone on, who's the founder of Priests for Life. And he has been one of the best advocates for the pro-life community. And so, Frank, we were talking about this in the context of Trump kind of honestly flip-flopping, you know, saying first he he was for more than 6 weeks, and then, you know, came out rightly, and I laud him for this, to say that he's voting no on Amendment 4 in Florida. But the question, of course, for Christians is to say, okay, clearly he's not as pro-life as he was in 2016. Does that change our view, not only of him in the presidential election, but I think maybe change our view of how much pro-lifers and Christians need to advocate in the way we advocate for pro-life?
Well, Jenna, first of all, it's always great to be on with you, and thank you for letting me help you address this. First of all, I would recommend in this whole debate that we move from evaluative language to descriptive language. And in fact, you know, when I counsel married couples, I did more in my work as a parish priest than I do now. But I would say, you know, look, the husband comes home and the wife says, you're not caring, or you're not loving the way you were before, and you're not sensitive anymore. Okay, so this is evaluative language. And, you know, very often those kinds of accusations, though they might be completely true, don't help advance the conversation or improve the relationship, because he doesn't know what in the world she means you're not sensitive, you're not caring, you're not loving. Give examples of the behavior that you object to. So we'll get into this context. Too many people, I think, are trying to argue, does President Trump deserve the label pro-life? It's an evaluative label. Does he deserve it more? Does he deserve it less? What's going on? And I think it's I find it myself. I mean, I'm immersed in this issue 24/7. And I find it hard to identify what people are trying to say. For example, I've asked folks who are struggling with this question, and I agree with what you said about the meritorious, we've got to look at this with grace and recognize the merit in everybody's position. But I ask them, what policy, what actual behavior and what actual accomplishments from President Trump's first administration in regard to the unborn that he did he now say were a mistake? Which specific actions did he say he wouldn't do again? And when we talk about those specific actions, we're not talking about the signing of a national 6-week abortion ban, because realistically, that's simply not going to be a decision he's going to have to make. That's not going to cross death. We don't have the will in Congress. And if we did, then neither would it be a political liability for him to say that he would sign it. So concrete, instituted and expanded the Mexico City policy protecting our tax dollars from abortion. He had the United States join the Geneva Consensus, an international alliance of pro-life countries, whereas Biden, of course, got us out of that right away. He Title 10, he enforced the language that says those functions of abortion, and enforced Planned Parenthood to drop out of the program. I mean, all this weakens the abortion industry, and he did many other things. And as your previous guest was mentioning at the end, you know, the judges. I mean, did he say, hey, folks, you know, I made a big mistake appointing hundreds of pro-life judges for lifetime terms. I'm not going to consider that anymore. Now, if he were saying specific policy, if he were describing, again, descriptive rather than evaluative, if he were describing specific policy reversals that came to see he needs to make, that would have me more concerned than his response, you know, politically charged electoral cycle where the Democrats have a battering ram in their hand about, oh, these Republicans are going to ban abortion. I'd be much more concerned by him saying those things than the things he's saying now. Initial pieces of advice for everybody engaged in this discussion.
And my guest this morning is Father Frank Pavone, founder of Priests for Life. And I think that's a great way to approach this debate, to talk about the difference between evaluative versus descriptive, because a lot of people want to talk about just Trump personally and what his personal views are. And I do think, and I agree with you, that we should care a lot more about his actions. And I know from working for him for several years that he can say a lot of things, and he can say a lot of it vaguely or non-specifically, or maybe to kind of try to escape the media or for whatever reason. But what his actions say about him are, I think, a lot more important. And you're right, he has not backed off from taking credit for the overturn of Roe versus Wade or backing off from the appointment of all of those justices. And so I hope that we could expect that he would be as consistently pro-life. But I also think that it really depends as well the type of people that he listens to. And my concern with even just the whole Amendment 4 debate, when he first had that response to this reporter from NBC, is I was wondering, has he even read it? Because his response in that to me was either he was misinformed on that or he hadn't actually read the language. And so it really does depend on the type of people that he puts around him. And that's why people such as yourself and prominent pro-life organizations need to make sure that if he does win a second term, that they are in that position to be able to advise appropriately.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and I am always eager to provide that kind of communication, input, and service to the administration. And you know, the fact of the matter too is, as you know, there are various people crafting policy right now. I'm part of the America First Policy Institute. That's what they do, and they have a beautiful set of pro-life policies called the HOPE agenda. And again, on the track of being descriptive rather than evaluative, I'd invite our listeners to check that out, the HOPE agenda of the America First Policy Institute. And these are the kinds of things, as you say, the people advising him, that's key. And I always say to people when they're talking about, you know, Trump as a person or Kamala Harris as a person, I say, no. It's not just about who's sitting in the Oval Office. It's about who's sitting in the office down the hall. And who's sitting in thousands of offices across the federal bureaucracy. I mean, for better or for worse, you know, you got these people sitting in there, nameless, faceless bureaucrats. Now, some of them hang on from administration to administration. That's actually one of the things President Trump wants to change. But others are brought in with the administration, and they're brought in holding the worldview and the philosophy of the administration. There's going to be people, in other words, exercising significant influence, you know, for example, who's going to head up the HHS and who are going to be, we think about Dr. Ben Carson in the first administration. There's going to be people he's going to be bringing in who are going to be far more pro-life, to borrow the evaluative term. They are going to be far more pro-life than folks believe that he is. And these people are going to have his ear, and they're going to be, you know, President Trump is not sitting down there, you know, at his computer crafting, detailed policies to come out of HHS. He's got a whole team of people that are going to be doing that. So that's what gives me confidence. And the final perspective I've been putting into all this is, I see my ex account. The house is on fire. The pro-life movement wants to be politically relevant and influential and accomplish our goal, which is to end abortion, not a single abortion And we can never tire of repeating this principle, and we're great at repeating it. Not a single person can ever play any power on earth in a million years. If we're going to get to that goal, we need freedom of speech. We need freedom of religion. We need pro-life people to be able to protest out on the public sidewalk and not be sitting in jail. The Democrats are going to bring with them more and more destruction of free speech and of the Constitution itself. We need a vibrant Constitution. We need free and fair elections to accomplish our goal as a movement. And, you know, even if people think our President Trump has bailed out on abortion, they can think that way. But he's going to support and reserve all the tools we need to turn that around. We don't have a movement unless we have those basic tools. And he has proven he's going to defend those tools. And the Democrats have proven they're going to destroy them.
Well said. Father Frank Pavone, you can follow him on X at Fr Frank Pavone. And that's a great point that you don't just vote for the candidate and the office holder themselves, but the entire administration when you're talking about a president. And we know that there's one that's more pro-life and one that's more extreme. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net. Have a great day at work.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.